some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, June 15th. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Tonight my co-host is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. Welcome back, Ray.
Hey, Jimmy, I missed you last week.
Where'd you go?
I was down in Philadelphia with our good friend Tom Peters at the Monk's Cafe for a Lambic dinner. And I got to tell you, it was, as much as I missed you guys last week, I had a great time.
Rock on, Philly Beer Week.
It was great.
Beer Sessions is supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, an association of New York City good beer bars, and sponsored by greatbrewers.com. Greatbrewers.com is one of our favorite sources of beer information and education. Test your beer knowledge, find great beer in your neighborhood, and check out the events calendar, all on greatbrewers.com. And if you're listening, call us with your questions live at 718-497-2128 or email us at beersessions@gmail.com. We have some special guests tonight. One of my favorite importers, Be United, the New York City area rep, is John Ludbaum. How are you, John?
Good. How you doing, Jimmy?
What did you bring us tonight?
Brought a bunch of Italian beers. Pretty exciting stuff.
I'm looking forward to tasting them.
Yeah.
Ray, have you had exposure to some of the Be United
I've got to confess, beers? Jimmy, I've got to confess that I'm pretty ignorant to the new Italian beers that are available, and I'm really looking forward to checking out this stuff tonight.
In our pre-show talks, we have another guest, Ben Granger from Beercraft. What did you say? These beers are naked beers?
Yeah. I would. Well, not really naked beers. They're just kind of coming from a place with a naked beer culture. You know what I mean? Similar to the American beer culture where we don't have any, like, restrictions. You know, there's no... There's no pre-existing history, so we can, or they can do whatever they want. They can add whatever they want to it. A ton of hops, a ton of spices, a high alcohol, low alcohol.
There's no purity law,
yeah,
like in Germany.
Yeah, there's no purity law, there's no restriction, there's no, like, being bound by tradition.
So it's almost like making beer in California in the 70s or 80s, right?
Something or making like beer that. In America now.
Yeah.
It's still for sure.
Cool. John, tell us about how did all these Italian beers start? Wow. I mean, just a few years ago, everyone identified Italian beer with Peroni, Moretti. And now some of my favorite beers in the whole world are coming from Italy.
Yeah, well, the Italian craft beer scene really got started in about 1996. There were four first breweries that opened up, three of which are available here in the States, Birreria La Baladin. Teo, their brewmaster, is really seen as sort of the figurehead of the Italian craft beer world. Birrificio Italiano and Birrificio Beba, all of which are available here in the States. Since 96, there's been, I think, between 200 and 300 breweries that have opened up all over the boot. And as opposed to... All over the boot.
I love that.
What you're seeing, you know, a lot of sort of the new world beer cultures, such as Japan or Scandinavia to a certain extent, or Australia, where you're really seeing masterful interpretations of traditional German, Belgian, and English styles. Italy is really building this stuff from the ground up, really coming from the slow food movement. Really, mm-hmm. The word terroir doesn't really... it's not very accurate, but they're really trying to use local ingredients and find a way to have the beers they make reflect the local food culture.
So you guys, what's your website, John?
Well, Be United, we're at beunitedint.com, and there you can link to the breweries of
it's a really great website. Have you checked it out, Ray?
Oh yeah, I have. Sure, I have.
I mean, it lists by country, but by it's very descriptive. It's one of my favorite beer websites.
Thanks, Jim.
It's a great destination.
Is the website changing, or has it been updated recently?
We launched a new site a couple months ago, or maybe only a month ago. That has some increased functionality and has some new stuff. Some of it applicable to consumers, some of it more for bars.
Right, for the trade.
Yeah, for the trade. But we try and keep it balanced. But the number one thing for us is just having as much information as possible.
What are we drinking right now?
Well, right now we're having the Piccolo Birrificio Saisonette. This is from...
Say that again, it's a little slower.
No problem. Piccolo Birrificio. The word Birrificio, you're
that
going to hear
slower.
A lot. Well, I'm good. Now's the time.
If it's a slow food movement, but you can speak faster.
Exactly.
You're going to see the word Birrificio a lot. Birrificio essentially means brewery. This is a really horrible translation, but birra is beer. Ficio sort of comes across as maker. So Birrificio is like a beer maker. And this one's called Piccolo Birrificio, or microbrewery.
Okay, so is this like a wheat beer?
There is some wheat in here. There's some wheat. There's some barley.
Good palate.
They sort of see it as an Italian Saison interpretation.
But I'm getting a lot of fruit, too. I'm getting like orange. I'm getting like...
Big citrus.
Well, almost like a Hoegaarden, but not as sweet.
Yeah, I mean, they're using some wheat. They're using a Trappist yeast, and then they're spicing it. With juniper, coriander, and with Kinoto peel.
Okay.
So Kinoto is a small Italian citrus fruit. But then the beer is aged in Chardonnay barrels.
Right.
How
strong is it?
6%.
Okay.
Yeah. Very unusual to see only a 6% beer this light in color. It's very much a golden that actually sees some barrel time and it gets some nice tannic structure. Really,
and it's obviously
the size of your mouth.
It's got yeast in there. It's not filtered.
I'm 99% sure everything we'll taste today is bottle conditioned.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they're living.
You know, at Jimmy's number really 43, lovely. When we describe some of these Italian beers, I always say, well, they're like Belgian style beers with Italian ingredients.
This brewery, especially. Yeah. These guys are really going for a spiced Belgian sort of thing.
Well, I mean, the sweetness that I get like in a Hoegaarden or a Kira or a standard Belgian style wheat beer, Witz beer, this is hoppier, obviously.
A little bit hoppier, but also it's got the tannins, which sort of blends in with the
bitterness. And that
bitterness
is really nice. It's really great summertime beer. I'm looking forward to drinking this when I mow my lawn.
Yeah.
If I had a lawn, I would mow my lawn and I would drink this if I had a lawn.
So, Bennett, at Beercraft, I mean... a lot of people ask us where they can buy beers retail. A frequent question is, I'm going to my local bodega or a deli, and so I'd like to actually buy, you know, beers to go. And one of the best beer stores in New York is Beercraft. And I think unanimously we can say that. That's one of the best beer stores. Ben, tell us about some of the Italian beers that you carry there.
Well, you know, we always have a rolling selection. You know, it is Brooklyn, so there's only so much square footage. So... certain beers get certain plays. A lot of time we've actually had all of the beers that we're about to taste in the shop. We do a lot of work with Del Ducato and Del Borgo. We see a lot of their stuff come through. This goes back a lot of years, but one of the first craft Italian beers that we saw was Balladine. You know, we had Balladine on the shelves, 7-8 years ago.
When did you open up?
We've been open for 9 years now.
9 years.
Yeah, man.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's been a while, and we've seen craft beer come a long way. We've seen craft beer not just in the U.S., but craft beer all across the world come a long way. Especially the Italian beers, for sure. You know, 9 years ago, it was Balladine. We didn't really have much of anything past that. Now we've got all sorts of like I said, Del Borgo and Del Ducato and all sorts of players rolling through, and we get visits from new Italian brewers that are running tiny little places in the north and running all sorts of interesting beers. I mean, I've sat and drank home brews with some of these guys as they come in the shop just to kind of check stuff out. I mean, randomly, I think it was Giovanni from Del Ducato.
Yeah.
Rolled in. This is 3 years ago after a big conference in New York. Just kind of strolled into the store. Was like checking stuff out. We ended up having a few pints of some of my homebrew.
That's one of the great things in this business is you can meet these great brewers and these people that are so huge in the business. And they'll just come in and you have a few beers with them and talk to them. And it's so unpretentious and just. It's a great bunch of people that are in this business.
Absolutely,
I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
Same here. You make some of the best. It's some of the best interactions that I've ever had with anybody in any business. You know, it's just kind of everything's really stripped away. And you just kind of have like real human interaction with these people over a beer. Everybody's kind of like
so
relaxed.
Passionate about what they're doing.
For sure.
What neighborhood in Brooklyn is your store?
Oh, we're in Park Slope, Brooklyn, on Fifth Avenue between Union and Berkeley.
And it's Beercraft with a K.
Yeah, BIERKRAFT. You always check out the website, www.beercraft.com. We always have our draft list up on the website. We keep some bottles on the website, but if you're really looking for something, it's always best to call us. There's only 300 or 400 on the website and about 1,200 in the shop.
Wow. I remember about a year ago, I came into your shop in Park Slope, and I saw that you were carrying Bateman's Triple XB, and that beer had been out of the market for like years and years, and it's always been one of my favorite English beers, Bateman's Triple XB. And I saw the bottle there, and that was a Sunday afternoon, and I went straight to my distributor. It's like, who is selling Bateman's Triple XB again? I don't know how you got it before I did. I'm kind of pissed off.
Well, I have no idea how we got it for you either.
Bastard.
Well, Ben, here's another question. Okay. Yeah. So you're probably the best retail beer shop in New York City. What are a couple other really good beer retail shops that our listeners could check out in New York?
In New York? I mean, you could hit up, I mean, our competitors totally, you could hit up New Beer. You hit up American.
So New Beer on Christie Street.
New Beer on Christie. Right. Yep. American down on Court.
And so Thrifty, Thrifty
Beverages.
Thrifty
American, yeah. Jay's great, man. Court he Street. Knows his stuff.
And Joe's got a place too, right?
Yeah, Joe Spiten up in Williamsburg at in that pedestrian mall.
Right.
Always
what's that called?
On Bedford Avenue.
The Williamsburg Mini Mall. The Spiten Dival Grocery.
Spiten Dival Grocery.
Yeah.
Joe Carroll, he owns Spiten Dival and Fetisau. He's a great guy.
Yeah, man. I go to all these places. I go to all these places to shop. I'm always in there scouring for bottles.
And do most of these beer shops, do they also sell food? I mean, I know you sell food, don't you?
We sell food, yeah.
You've got charcuterie, don't you?
Yeah, we have cheese, chocolate, we make sandwiches, we do all sorts of stuff. But we definitely sell a pile of food, for sure.
And you also sell growlers, right?
Oh, yeah. We've got 14 draft lines for growlers. All counter pressure filled. There's only one other system like it in the country. We built it in shop.
Can you drink in the store itself?
For sure.
Oh.
Now you can. You used to be you couldn't, but now you definitely can, which makes the shop a lot cooler.
Yeah.
For sure.
As long as the employees aren't drinking too much.
No, that's quite. That's all right.
It's okay.
Oh yeah. We don't mind.
Are you hiring?
They gotta know what the product tastes like, you know.
But here's a question: if you were gonna hire Ray, mm-hmm. what would you hire Ray to do?
I would hire Ray to pour growlers. Pour growlers and sell pints, for sure. For sure. I mean,
a really lousy bartender.
That's okay. You only have to sell pints and talk to people. Just have to be nice to people. That's all.
I'm not very good at that.
Mm. You know, when you started out, Ray, did you ever train your staff how to pour beers and things?
Absolutely. No, we spend a lot of time doing
How do you do that? I mean, what's your ideal pour?
Well, you know, you got to hold the glass close to the spout. It depends on what kind of draft system you're using because they have different kind of controls. But you don't want too much head. There's people that, you know, there's different cultures for different amount of head in a beer. I mean, the English, they don't want any head. The Belgians insist on loads of head. So do the Germans. The Germans and the Belgians really like head. I don't know what's wrong with the British. I never could figure that out. But I guess the British want more beer in their glass is what it comes down to. And I just show them. I just show them what to expect. Like, there's different beers that have different requirements. For example, wheat beer, you want about an inch of foam at the top. And for a Belgian wheat beer, you know, a wit beer, you want about an inch of foam. But for an English IPA or an English bitter, very, very little head. Very, very little foam.
Our producer, Bree, right now, she's laughing because she likes when you say that certain countries like to put more head on their beer.
Okay.
So something like that.
I was talking business.
But Ben, what about your staff? How do you go about it? It's an interesting question because it comes up a lot is, you know, someone says, oh, that new bartender doesn't know how to pour. I mean, how do you go about training someone to pour beer, especially with something? I think the growlers are kind of complicated.
That actually, you get a handful of training sessions before you're allowed to do that on your own because it's kind of complicated. You have to hook the bottle up to an apparatus, blow out the CO2. The bottle gets pressurized, so you have to be careful because you're carrying around a pressurized glass vessel. So that takes a while. Nobody
a
on
pressurized
first,
glass vessel. Yeah, that sounds scary as hell.
I know, right?
Especially in a bar. No, I quit. I'm going to stick with what I do.
Well, that's cool. But yeah, so it takes a couple of times before you're allowed to pour growlers on your own. After that, pouring pints or goblets or, you know, whether it be, you know, Pilsner or Hefeweizen, Ray's right, they're all different depending on what you're going after. But we try and pour them, you know, as exact as possible. And, you know, you get about 20 minutes worth of training as far as it comes to, like, pouring that kind of stuff. I run all the draft lines. So I regulate all the draft lines. So usually if there's a problem with pouring, I'm going to know before anybody.
How often do you clean the lines?
Depends on the lines. I mean, when I first started doing it, I cleaned the lines between every keg. And then I realized
that's insane.
I was nuts.
Yeah, that's insane.
So we slowed down to a point where every couple of weeks I'll clean the lines.
Right.
Unless I'm going from from wild to straight.
Well, right, right. If you're changing styles like that, you've got to take care of that.
Changing styles, yeah.
Yeah, right. If I'm going beer. From something, yeah. If I'm going for something wild or smoked.
What's the beer that we're drinking right now, John? Let's before we finish this segment.
Real quick, it's from Del Borgo, the brewery we were talking about before. They're located in Borgo, just outside of Rome. They also own a brew pub in Rome called Beer e Food. And this is the Reale Extra, which is their IPA. And, you know, it's definitely an IPA, but where American brewers are going for as much bitterness as humanly possible, as much maybe hop flavor as humanly possible, these guys are going for citrus. They want to get big so citrus crazy. Aroma.
Let's give a shout out to Rome. There was a really great guy, talk about the European Union. His name's Johnny. He's from Ireland, and he owns a great beer shop in Rome. It's called Johnny's Off License. Have you met him?
I have not met him, but I've heard of the guy, and I heard everybody that comes back from Rome talk about him. So I'd like to meet him.
He's put me to shame. He knows all the Be United, all the small producers in Germany and Belgium. He carries in his shop. But he'll put you and I to shame because he knows more about American microbrews than anyone I've ever met. And he comes here two or three times a year and goes to all the beer festivals. Amazing guy. Johnny's Off License in Rome if you're ever in Rome. Let's take a little short break here, listen to some cool music from Brie, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
A dying lass. Soon they all reckon she'll be pushing up the grass, and the bones might take and the skin might sag, and still she's got the strength to have a hairy rag. Hairy rag, hairy rag, do anything just to get a hairy rag. And she curses herself for the life she's led, and rolls herself a hairy rag and puts herself to bed.
I think that last welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. I think that last song was by the Kinks. Is that true? Love the Kinks. I had an old restaurant called Muggsy's Chow Chow in the 90s. Ray Davies used to come in and hang out sometimes, and always wanted to bring me to London to drink champagne and grappa.
Jimmy, so, you met Ray Davies?
Ray Davies used to go to, I had this little restaurant in the 90s called Muggsy's Chow Chow in the East Village. It was really cool. I mean, and this guy, Ray Davies from the Kinks, used to come in whenever he was in New York, and we'd hang out, and he loved grappa, he loved champagne, and he always tried to get me to go to London, and I never did.
He lived in New Orleans for a while.
I remember there was a story he was robbed in New Orleans.
Well, his girlfriend, somebody tried to steal her purse, and he held a gun, not Ray Davies, but the bad guy held a gun to his girlfriend and grabbed the purse, and Ray Davies went after him, and the bad guy shot Ray. It's like, why would you chase a guy with a gun in New Orleans? Because you're going to get shot. Anyway, and he got very angry at New Orleans and moved out.
Wow. Strange but true.
We miss him.
But we're back on Beer Sessions Radio, sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. This week, there's a great event at Sunswick in Astoria. It's one of the new Good Beer Seal bars. Sunswick is in the middle of its third annual Belgian Beer Fest, which goes through this Friday, June 18th. It's funny, I saw their listings on the beer menus and the Good Beer Seal site. I'm like, how long does Belgian Beer Week last at Sunswick? Sunswick, this guy Juan owns it. It's really cool. It's like Juan, come on. Is it 2 days? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a week? That means we should all get out there. Has anyone in this room been to Sunswick
in
Queens?
Sure.
It's a nice bar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get out there and support him because the annual Belgian Beer Fest. He's got Duranke, St. Bernardus, and West Mile. And also you can call in 718-497-2128.
West Mile on draft?
West Mile on draft. Oh, yeah. Double and triple, man. Have you ever had it on draft?
I have in Belgium.
Ooh.
Never in America.
It is available here. It's good. We got an email question, too. This question comes from our Heritage Radio Network page. D. Riz writes, "Hey, Jimmy. Weird question. Lately, I've felt very tired after a beer or two. I usually drink IPAs. Is there an energetic beer you recommend?" Well, that's a good question.
You know,
I drink beer often, and sometimes I'm tired.
Do you, Jim?
And sometimes I'm not tired. I want to ask you a few more questions, Mr. D. Riz, but Is there an energetic beer, Ray? A beer that you drink that kind of gets you pumped up?
Well, first of all, we were speaking about this in the break. My experience is that when somebody says they have one or two beers, that means they've had three or four, maybe five beers. People usually underestimate what they've had, and they start forgetting, and then they get sleepy. That's just my experience, just being in the business for quite a while and watching, observing, and paying attention. And I think that if I'm going to drink a beer that's going to keep me awake, I'm probably not going to be drinking beer. I'm probably going to find something else to drink. I'm thinking coffee. Maybe
actually,
a coffee
I'm
stout.
I'm
going to
steer you back. Yeah, yeah. There's some really good beers made with espresso and coffee, and that we're going to introduce our next guest. We've got one of the co-founders of Peak Organic Brewing, Mike Cadeau. They're located in Portland, Maine. They started in 2006. And I was drinking over the winter. One of their beers is called Peak Organic. It was the Espresso Amber Ale. And I was drinking it up in Haverhill, Massachusetts, my hometown. And it was loaded with espresso, and it kept me up. I was drinking it till midnight, and I couldn't go to sleep that night.
Jimmy, this might be the best segue we've done ever.
Definitely.
I very much appreciate it. Thanks so
Tell
much.
Us about the Peak Espresso Amber Ale.
I always like to make history, frankly, yeah. I actually have some right here. We can try
it. Oh, my
on
goodness.
The air.
You actually have some?
I mean, this beer had espresso in it. I was like, it was 12 o'clock. I should have been tired. Next thing, I was up till 4 in the morning. So
I hope D. Riz is listening to this, because we have serious information for this boy.
Well, the other thing is, when you're drinking poor beer, girl. You know, I mean, I want the other experts to join in, but, you know, there's got to be like a progression to it. Usually start with something light and refreshing, and then you go a little stronger. But near the end, you know, you're going to start really picking your beers. You know, you don't want to just keep drinking the same beer. At some point, you want to drink a beer a little stronger, maybe like St. Bernardus Quadruple, something that's like extra strong, and it just kind of picks you up. Or even better, you know, a lot of beers are made with coffee and espresso now. Nice coffee stout, espresso stout, or something.
I would think that this is a really great breakfast beer. If I'm going to have a, you know, something to wake up to, you might as well have an espresso stout, right?
It's cheers to that. It's a we don't mess around with this beer. It's probably our biggest flavored beer. It's mostly because we love coffee. And when I was growing up, my dad was the kind of guy that couldn't function before a second pot of coffee. And he has spread that down through his boys, frankly. And so what we do here is we took kind of the our local really great coffee person up in Maine, who is Coffee by Design, and actually had them create or actually brew the espresso for us that we add in the finishing tank. So this is like about as caffeinated and coffee as we could get.
I've got two questions about this. So when, first of all, I'm noticing it's not terribly black. It's like,
no.
I would expect to be like really, really dark, but it's not. It's kind of a dark amber, cloudy kind of a beer. It looks more like a double IPA, maybe.
It's actually basically, you're exactly right, it's a double amber. Almost exactly our amber ale doubled in a lot of ways.
So the other question I have also is how the coffee is brewed first,
mm-hmm.
or the beans are the beans grind up and put into the brew pot?
No, we actually use coffee.
Right. So you brew up a bunch of espresso,
uh-huh.
and you add that at what point in the brewing process?
In the finishing tank.
In the finishing tank.
Yeah.
Okay.
It gets added in and mixed up, and then that's why this is not, you know, it's almost, that's why it's so big on the nose as well. When we smell this beer, it smells.
So that's why when I drank it at midnight, it kept me up all night.
Yeah, there's a lot of caffeine in it. This is like what we found, and we drink.
Oh, man.
I like coffee beers.
This is great.
And we had a ton of, you know, a lot of people use the rinds or the beans in the process and get the essence of it. And we wanted to, frankly, experiment and mess around. And what we came up with is that if we actually add the coffee, it'll be really coffee.
So tonight, I'm just going to throw a little plug in here. Tonight, we're having a Peak beer mm-hmm. tasting at DBA Brooklyn at 113 North 7th Street. And are we drinking this beer tonight? Do we have it?
We are not. This is unfortunate. This is our winter seasonal. And this beer is actually, this one you're drinking has actually been aged just in the bottle for, I guess, a year and a half now.
How strong is it?
This will run around 6-8%.
Okay, so it's not crazy strong.
No.
So I guess Mr. D. What's his
D.
name?
D-Riz.
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 I think this
Thanks,
is great,
D-Riz.
I think this is a great solution to his problem.
Look for an espresso or coffee beer. But, Mike, so we're talking about, you know, unique beers from mm-hmm. Italy. You guys are from Portland. There's some really cool brewers up there. How did that scene start?
I mean, I'm not the guy to ask how it actually started. We're a late comer, and we just hope to catch up with them, if you know what I mean. But there is a great beer culture up in Portland, Maine.
Well, you got David Geary up there. Yeah. You got Ellen Pugsley. Mm-hmm. And
for you, as a fairly new brewery up in Portland, who are the deans of Maine beer you would say you got to recommend these
for
guys?
For me personally, it's Allagash. I mean, I think Allagash is an exceptional brewery. They're not out of Portland Township, but Allagash is exceptional. And then I'm still a sucker for some Shipyard. Shipyard, even the export, you know, with the big beer culture of the United States, it sometimes gets
I love the old Thumper from those guys.
Yeah, it's just they make good beers, and they make them well, and they can make them consistently. And as a brewer, I just have a lot of respect for that.
And also, Dave Geary, again, I'll say it, David Geary makes great beer.
He's a cool
Hampshire,
guy.
His Hampshire Ale,
cool guy.
Is one of the great, you know, English style beers in America. And also, he makes a great porter. Dave's a great. We should get him down on the show, Jimmy. Bree, make a note. Get Dave Geary down here.
Yeah, Dave Geary, you know. But so Portland's got a great culture up there. There's restaurants, and is it a year-round culture? Are people up there year-round, or is it really more of a summer?
It's mostly seasonal. I mean, if you're talking about actual people, you know. there's
a lot of lobsters there, though.
Yeah. The winters are tough up there, which is why I mostly leave my brother John as the brewer. And so I can't take much credit personally for the Espresso Amber. That's my brother John, who's a good man. He's my best friend, and we do this together. But he's the brewer, and I'm the I don't know what else.
What do you do, Mike?
I don't know what I do, man. You know, can we curse on this show? I don't know.
Yeah,
I make shit happen. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what that shit is, but it, you know,
well,
whatever.
You know,
needs
the espresso
done,
and the beer might, you know, have something to do with that as well.
That's right. So
that was gross.
We run a company, and as all of, you know, I think just about everyone in here. You know, there's unseen problems all the time that need taken care of. And it's amazing how much time you spend problem solving. And I do a lot of
that. We're talking about the Yale train a little bit today.
So here's a question. So you guys are run a brewery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from this little town in Massachusetts called Haverhill, Massachusetts.
I've heard of
it. I'm up there, and you know, I'm in a bar, and there's no really good beers. All of a sudden, I see Peak, and I said, I'm going to get Peak mm-hmm. Espresso, Amber Ale. You know, how do you guys go about getting your beers into certain bars in different states? I mean, how many states are you guys in? This is like a huge business.
We're now in 21 states. And for us, what we decided early on was we weren't going to take a traditional kind of beer route, which is you saturate the local market, make a bunch of stuff, T-shirts, hats, keychains, whatever, and go at it like that. And Peak makes nothing. I have no Peak shirt. Wearing a...
You don't have any keychains?
We have no keychains. Oh. We have no hats. I don't have sunglasses branded with Peak.
What?
And so we put all of our money, all of it, into people. On the people selling Peak Organic Brewing Company on the streets. And we find that's the best, you know, if you can get it in bars and get it in people's hands, there's no better way to sell beer.
You know, if I could hop in real quick.
Please.
Are you guys familiar with Achschlenkerle?
They're the great
historical smoke beer brewery in Bamberg. I have a fantastic email that their brewer, Matthias Trum, who I believe he's a 13th generation brewmaster, of someone sent him a letter asking for a Schlenkerle hat. And he wrote this brilliant email. His English is all but flawless, but essentially saying what you were just saying, like, We don't make hats. Yeah. We make beer.
So hats and T-shirts.
Fantastic.
That's right. Actually, I'm glad you spoke up, John, because I actually want to ask you something. Be United, going back to Be United, one of my favorite importers. You've got kind of a mysterious owner dude, Mateus. Tell us about this guy, because I've always wanted to meet him. I've never met him. I never have.
You know, I mean, the situation is...
Where does he live?
He lives up in Connecticut, but the situation has come with a company where we have a full-time operations staff of 6 or 7 people. I mean, it's just the fact is the management just isn't able to really leave the operations center in Connecticut. But we do get Matthias down here from time to time.
What's an operations center at a beer importer like?
Well,
I'm actually very curious about that as well. Yeah.
We opened our operations center within the past 6 months or so. It's a fully functional warehouse. It's the way it's positioned, it's 100%... naturally insulated from the climate.
You guys drive around on forklifts all day?
We have guys on forklifts.
You have forklifts?
Did you say it's naturally insulated?
Yeah, the way it's positioned and the way it's with the sun, and we've arranged it so we actually don't need any heating or cooling. It's always at cellar temperature. We just installed a kegging line there, and we just commissioned
the first stuff
in Connecticut. You're welcome anytime. We do draft training sessions up
there. I thought your warehouse was in New Jersey.
We used to rent some warehouse space in Jersey, but we've been open in Connecticut about at least 6 months now.
Oh, okay.
And the most exciting thing is we just commissioned our first bulk liquid temperature and climate controlled tanker. So it's the size of the back of a semi-truck, divided into four or five sections, and instead of our several thousand kegs shipping them all over the world, we're going to be shipping these tankers around the world and kegging them at our center in Connecticut.
Is Ron still with you guys?
Ron is still with us, believe it or not.
I only see him in foreign countries. I see him in London. I see him in
Brussels.
Well,
Ron recently
Brussels.
Moved down to Virginia. So is that a foreign country? Maybe not.
Kind of. Wait, so John, so tell us, which of your famous small production breweries in Europe are going to be using this new tanker service?
Not just Europe,
you
Jimmy. Not just
tell
Europe.
Us. Tell us a couple of the brands.
The tankers were built in Lancashire. So
you've got brands like from Hitachino in Japan.
Well, right.
Tell us about the names of the brands.
We eventually will have a tanker just going back and forth to Hitachino in Japan because that
and
is a
what
brand
about
that
in
is
Belgium?
Exclusive. Belgium, we're going to be eventually bringing in Dedol. The goal is to have Doltev kegs available at all times. We're going to be going to Hansen's now that John is the brewmaster is back up and running after he had a little back surgery, but he's back up functional Hansen's, now.
Yeah. What about Germany?
Germany, most of, a bit, but our biggest draft brands like Schneiderweissen, Reisdorf, and Einbecker, we don't need the bulk tanker for. We have a good enough volume that we can just bring those back and forth. But right now the tanker is half full with beers from British breweries, as it was built in Lancashire. So we're going to have regular availability of Thornbridge Hall Jaipur kegs, Harvest and Bitter and Twisted, things like that. So you can expect to see a lot more of those beers in the marketplace in the next
and
few
casks.
Months. Well, the great thing is, if we're kegging in Connecticut, you want us to fill a cask, we'll fill a cask.
You all should have seen the look on Ben's face of surprise and excitement and enjoyment when he heard all that.
Now, very quickly, to Ray's point, you're right. Just filling a cask isn't real ale. Right. And we're still going to do our real ale shipments three or four times a year. Mm-hmm. But if we have Bitter and Twist in the maturation tank and, you'd rather have it in the keg to pour, it will work. But it won't. It of course, will not be the proper real ale. Right. We're still going to do those shipments three or four times a year.
Okay.
Great. Ben, are you excited about that?
Do they have a draft? For real? Seriously?
We get maybe 12 kegs a year now. But
what's the name of the brewery?
Dedol.
I remember getting this still not. Oh. On draft.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding liquid. But
well,
seriously,
scary.
Do they have a draft?
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a regular availability as soon as we get that from back from Dedol.
Those guys are crazy, too.
Ben, is that one of your favorite beers?
Dulé Teve is it's one of my favorite beers. It's incredible. It's big in all the right ways, but still very drinkable.
Dulé Teve?
I'm not Flemish or speak any French or anything like that. So I believe it translates into mad bitch.
Literally, it's named after his mother.
Not his mother-in-law?
No, I'm not joking in any way, shape, or form. If you go visit the Dedol Brewery, his mother, Chris is the brewmaster.
Chris, right. I know
Chris. And his mother leads all of the tours, has for decades. And she is reportedly a very cantankerous old woman. And I believe he named the Doltev after her. There's a really horrible, horrible, aggressive, angry drawing on the label.
Does Chris still wear that leopard skin
yes.
jacket? He does.
Yes.
his wife is lovely.
I've never met his wife. I imagine she's wonderful. I mean, Chris is a genius.
So here's my question about those guys. They make one of the best stouts, the Imperial Stout that they come out with. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be on draft?
Well, again, now that we have... Right now...
I'll buy it.
I will sell it.
I'm with Ray on this.
No, right now, we have a situation where we can send a certain number of our own personal kegs to Dedol each year. And Dedol will fill them and send them back.
And is Union Beer making that happen for you? Or is that a thing?
No, this is us.
Separate. Just it's a United thing. It's not a Union distributor thing.
No, this is us. I mean, obviously, Union is our distributor here in New York, as we have distributors.
So let's keep tabs on this. Follow up with Be United, great importer from greatbrewers.com. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're here supported by Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, an association of New York City good beer bars, and our sponsor is greatbrewers.com. To learn more about education and beer knowledge and everything, go to greatbrewers.com. Greatbrewers.com really is cool. I mean, it's a site where you can take the Great Brewers Test 100, the Great Brewers Test 20. You should go on and actually you can cheat, because if you put two windows on your, or screens on your window, or windows on your screen,
so you
can take the test
the
on one side, and the other side you can put all their educational materials up. So you can go through and kind of study as you take the test. And I know that Sam Merritt and some other guys worked on the Great Brewers Tests. It's the way to go. You can learn from the origins of beer. I mean, have you guys talked about, you know, do you guys know when beer started? I mean, have
when
we talked about
started?
This ever? Yeah, I mean, going back, 5,000 years?
Yeah, I thought it was the, you know, either Egyptians or Assyrians. Or,
well, it's, you know, beer is the reason why people, man stopped being nomadic. That's why we settled down. They used to think it was to make bread, but it's actually to brew beer.
Well, again, it makes you tired.
You know. Yeah, it makes you tired.
And they say it's an ideal vegetarian diet. You know, you can actually, it preserves the wheat. Then the wheat has like all these enzymes, and it's good for you, and you can drink it and
you drink
not
enough
get
beer,
poisoned
you need,
by water. You know,
you don't need food.
You can drink beer.
Drink beer.
Actually, Dave Broderick, who's one of our regular contributors from Blind Tiger, he sent a friend over yesterday to Jimmy's Number 43, and she said, "This is so great. You guys only have beer for lunch." And I'm like, "Awesome." And she's like, "I'm just drinking beer for lunch." I'm like, "Perfect."
What about beer for breakfast? A little espresso stout?
Yeah.
Espresso amber for breakfast?
So what's this? The next beer that you brought, John, it's the Cucamurla? What is this beer?
Yeah, the Cucamurla.
I want to go through all the Italian beers tonight, because this is awesome. Also,
we can't forget
the
peak beers either.
Excuse my French, but these beers are so effing expensive. Why are they so expensive? I mean, these are like really good beers made in the Belgian style, but they're more expensive than any other beers. Why?
I wouldn't say they're more expensive than any other beers. They're certainly at the higher end of the market. There's a number of reasons for that, part of which is the scale of operation in Italy. You know, for instance, Grotto Plato, it's a brew pub with a very, very relatively small restaurant. Actually, their chef is phenomenal, makes marinated snails that actually, if you guys want, we have available, but really incredible. Most of these breweries are single-person operations, and the expense is, they charge us a lot for the beer. Another part of the issue is that the Italian tax code hasn't, you know, as I mentioned before, the Italian craft beer scene only started in 1996. So the Italian tax code hasn't really gotten up to speed with how to tax beer for export. So there's a considerable expense there.
So do they tax it the same way they tax wine?
No. My understanding of the situation is that Italian beer, for instance, if I were to buy a beer from you, Ray, mm-hmm. You would have to pay a certain tax to the government that
sure.
you would either pass along to me or be included, whatever. In Italy, my understanding is if you export beer, you have to pay a tax as if you're selling it on premise plus an excise tax to get it out of the country.
So like a sales tax plus an excise tax.
Essentially, you're hit at least twice. And it sounds like small potatoes, but it really adds up.
Well, it comes down to the percentages.
It does. And you know, these are just many factors
other
that contribute.
Countries like Norway, there's a few other countries where their beer was held back by, was it alcohol percentage and
yeah.
other taxes?
Another great example. I mean, when I say these guys are at the top of the market, I mean, many of our breweries from Scandinavia are just as expensive. And we would love to do something about it, but as importers, the last thing in the world we'd ever want to do is say to a brewer, your beers are too expensive, drop down the price, we won't buy it. If they say this beer costs this much to make and I need to charge this
oh,
much
come
to
on,
live.
John, kick their asses. Make them dance.
Yeah, but then the distributor kicks our asses and you kick the distributor's asses and no one wins.
It's like a ballet out there. Everyone's, you know, everyone's dancing
make
around
dance.
And trying to get theirs.
I think they make the most of it, too, because these beers are really good. It's like they're using the best ingredients, small production. You know, we're at a shame, you know, that we don't make beers like these. These are awesome.
But I think I do think there's truth to that, and thank you. But at the same time, we're sort of in a fortunate position where we pick 12 breweries from Italy, and those are the ones we get to really represent in the U.S.
If I
were in Italy picking 12 U.S. breweries, I think, you know, if I don't want to say if we whittled the U.S. breweries
that'd
down
be
to
a
the
huge conversation.
Yeah, it'd be a much larger conversation. But there are many, many breweries in Italy, and almost all of them are servicing the local population and making really incredible.
But I love
stuff.
The analogy about Italy that Ben made earlier about the naked beer movement, because that's one of the reasons that America has such a great beer culture now is because there's no rules or regulations about it. There's no beer purity laws. There's no tradition like in England. I mean, English beers are great. And I go to the Great British Beer Festival every 2 years. And there's a ton of beer that's really good, but they're all very, very similar. And I always find myself ending up at the cider table because the ciders are something that I just don't have access to here in America. But English beer, it's like great bitter. But they're all kind of the same beer. They're wonderful. I love them. But in America, it's wide spectrum of beers. And apparently in Italy, that kind of culture is happening. And it's, I think it's fantastic.
Cool. John, you just poured another beer. Let's talk about this beer.
Okay, this is one Ben brought in.
We're going crazy in Italian beers tonight, guys. Guess what? Ben bought some Italian beers. John brought the beers he imports. Mm-hmm. And this is like probably the best night on Beer Sessions Radio in terms of the beers and the peak stuff. This is really great.
Yeah, as I said, Ben brought this one in. It is something I import. It's a guy we were talking about earlier, Giovanni from Birrificio del Ducato. Do we have time for a quick story about Giovanni?
Please.
So I mentioned the Birrificio Italiano was one of the, as I said, that word Birrificio you're going to hear all the time. Birrificio Italiano was one of the first four breweries to open up in Italy. Giovanni saw an ad in the paper that Birrificio Italiano was going to sell their entire brewery, all of the physical ingredients of their brewery to expand their brew house. Giovanni said, my partners and I will buy your brewery if I get to apprentice with you on it for 6 months. And ended up getting to apprentice with him for a year, then got the actual brewery he had apprenticed on and opened it up. He's in his early 30s. He's 31 or 32. He is just the coolest, nicest guy, and he makes phenomenal beers. They're in a town just outside of Parma. I don't remember the name of the town, unfortunately. It's very, very small. But it's the town that Verdi was born in. So this beer is the Verdi Imperial Stout. And there's a, you know, as with many of these Italian beers, they are using some locally grown ingredients. If you guys have taken a sip of the beer thus far,
yes.
Maybe you're starting to feel something creeping up the back of your throat right now.
Is there weed in this beer?
There's a very, very, very small amount of red chili pepper.
Oh.
It's incredibly, incredibly subtle, and but like after about 2 or 3 minutes, you just start to feel this tingle at the top of your throat, and that starts to move forward across the palate.
But
it's
like
a beautiful beer.
Italian slow food movement. It's very subtle.
Very, very subtle.
Yeah.
You know, Jerome Rebertet from BFM, who we had in the last time I was here, he once told me that it's very, very easy to make a beer that tastes like something. It's very easy to throw a bunch of pepper in a beer and make a beer that tastes like pepper.
Right, it's easy
to make a beer that tastes a lot like chili. But to use the ingredients subtly and to make it integrated and make it subtle and make it beautiful is very, very difficult.
Ben, very Italian.
Why do you carry such great Italian beers in your beer craft?
I mean, besides the fact that they're awesome and they taste great. I mean, there's not much to say after that. I mean, just like you said, they're a pricey beer, but you're getting an incredibly good product for what you pay for. And the reason why we carry them is because we want to carry the stuff that, like, other people are afraid to touch, you know? And when you come to BeerCraft, you're not like, I mean, you do have the opportunity to walk to the shelf and just grab something randomly, but there's always a handful of people in that aisle that say, hey, do you need some help? And it's not like, hey, can I carry that for you? It's like, hey, do you need to know about what you're about to purchase?
That's one of the things I love about the beer industry. And in my bar, this happens. I'm sure it happens to you too, Jimmy. Whereas you're actually, you know, I try to teach my customers, my employees about beer, but the conversation in the bar, it's like the other customers are teaching my staff and the other customers about what they're having. Like I've somebody comes in and they've been to Italy or they've been to Belgium and they know these beers and they're like, you know, having a they're hosting a class on Belgian beer or Italian beer or German beer right there. And I'm just like listening to it and like, great.
It's funny. We talk about this at the shop all the time too. One of our biggest jokes is that our regulars sell more beer than our actual employees, man.
That's like, totally true.
They'll roll in and they'll be shopping for 45 minutes or an hour and they'll be touching bottles and this and that. Somebody will walk in and pick something up and, you know, this guy, Anthony, who's one of our regulars, will see them pick it up and then walk over and say, hey, have you had that? And then 40 minutes later, you know, they're walking out with that bottle after Anthony's talked their ear off about it.
It's funny how that works. It's like what do they call it? It's viral.
I mean,
one of the things I first noticed when I opened my bar up was that if I came in, this is like back in 1994, and I poured myself in the summertime, a wheat beer in a proper German wheat beer glass, like a Schneiderweiss, like a bottle of Schneiderweiss in a Schneiderweiss glass with a big head and that huge golden color. Within 20 minutes, there'd be 7 or 8 more glasses on the bar. It happens. It's viral.
True.
And on the opposite extreme, that's a lot big reason for like Blue Moons blow up recently. I mean, it is that you put an orange on it. People say, "What's the orange for?" And it's on the total opposite side. And you know, that obviously you're talking about apples and oranges, but people see stuff and the visual.
We're talking
so
about real
visceral.
Beer, and we're talking about Coors.
Well, you know, it's funny you say
you
say apples and oranges, but like people also say to me when they I also import Schneider Weiss. People will say, "Oh, Schneider Weiss, great! I'll take it for my bar. Should I serve it with an orange?"
right.
Like I'm not sure you're going
to
do very well.
What's the proper way to serve a good German wheat beer?
A good well
in a big tall glass.
You know, the biggest challenge with German wheat beer, like, well, actually, Schneider Weiss specifically, in Bavaria, all wheat beers are brewed to have a lot more CO2, a lot more carbon dioxide in them than they are in the U.S. And a lot of Bavarian breweries have made the decision that to be in the U.S., they need to change their recipe and they need to make their beer with less carbon dioxide in it. Schneider Weiss has not made that decision. They want the product to be exactly the way it is. That does mean you have to pour it a little carefully.
And that's why it should be served in a bottle.
It should. Well, you know, traditionally in Bavaria, Schneider Weiss is a bottled product. Schneider has worked very, very hard to make, to control and have a lot of quality in their keg conditioning in the kegs. I think Schneider Weiss is a beautiful draft product, traditionally bottled, but I agree that beautiful traditional Bavarian tulip glass with about 2 inches of head on the top is one of the most dramatic and beautiful presentations
Schneider
in the
Weiss
beer world.
Has great head.
Well, let's finish with a Mike from Peaks here. He's got a really great, is this a Beak IPA?
Yeah, that's our India Pale Ale. sorry, I was trying to think. Yeah, so that's that.
That's refreshing, and we're talking about
IPA
refreshing.
Stands for India Pale Ale.
Yeah, who knew, right? or I've actually been in. You would be surprised how many samplings I've been at, where people come up and say, "Oh, IPA, that is my favorite beer. It's all I drink is IPAs."
I've never ever heard that.
Oh, it happens to me. It's happened to me half a dozen times.
I've never heard IPA. No, I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, and but the best part is that they drink them all. You know, this is a guy who's like, "Oh, I'll definitely take your IPA." You know what I mean? Like, "Oh, I'll take that." And he knows, it's like, and the Stone IPA and the, you know, the Smutty Nose IPA, these are my favorite beers.
Maybe it just went over my head completely. Maybe I was drunk.
Yeah, well, listen, there's a lot of lower end beer drinkers in this world. And that's the truth. But this was our
this is lovely.
This was our spring seasonal 2 years ago.
These are all organic, right?
All organic, yeah.
So
it's really good, Mike. I really appreciate that.
The grain and everything. I mean, the water.
Well, in this beer, the grain is all organic.
So the Peak IPA.
That's right. Peak
is really good.
I appreciate that. It's actually our number one seller. And it's been a real godsend for us because, my brother brewed it about 2 years ago, and I remember bringing it into Ben's store. And frankly, if I can make I'll talk about this in a second, but if I can make a quick plug, Beercraft in Park Slope is one of the coolest stores I've ever been into. And I go in there a lot. I live right across the tracks in Prospect Heights.
You don't live in Maine?
I do not live in Maine. My brother John, as I said, he's the sucker. And I go in there a lot, and Ben himself has created one of the coolest beer systems you will ever see, and go in there and ask him about it. And he doesn't just know about the beer. He created it. He's an engineer. He knows all about the cheeses, the meats, the everything. It's a wicked cool experience, and I just had to put out a quick... I go in there maybe too much. Well, maybe not. Right, Ben? No.
Are you a stalker?
Stalkers and all
I'm not
that.
The person to ask that, right?
Stalkers.com.
Well, listen, guys, we love the Peak IPA IPA. Check that out. Do you guys have a website?
Yeah, peakbrewing.com.
Peak, so it's not Peak IPA, it's peakbrewing.com.
Peakbrewing.com.
And there's a couple of Good Beer Seal Bar events coming up tonight at Jimmy's number 43. John Ludbaum from Be United will be there with what?
Tonight we're doing a $10 tasting of imported wood-aged, barrel-aged beers.
So these are like super expensive beers.
Really remarkable.
You get a taste of all of them for $10. It's the deal of the century. And tomorrow night, Wednesday, June 16th, Blind Tiger Ale House, the Great Divide Brewing Company. Great Divide's a really great brewery in Colorado. Thursday, June 17th, at the Gate, Founders Night. Founders from Michigan. Monday, of course, as always, Liquids of Interest at DBA Brooklyn with Ray Dieter.
Saison Beers is...
And another one, Joe Carroll from Spite and Dive will just texted me. He says next Monday, June 21st, there's a summer solstice night at Spite and Dival. I don't know what that means, but it's probably going to be some really good beers. So check out goodbrewseal.com for your favorite beer events. And we're coming to the end of this episode. I'd like to send out a thank you to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can find links to our member bars and find out about July Good Beer Month events on goodbeerseal.com. And one of the featured events of July Good Beer Month is Metopia, metopia.org. It's going to be a really cool night of over 30 chefs and barbecuers on Governors Island in New York City. It's going to be really cool. And 6 Point Craft Ales from Brooklyn is making a custom smoked ale. And you can also find Beer Sessions on Facebook. Friend us and talk about tonight's episode. Thanks to my lovely co-host, Ray Dieter. I'm Jimmy Carboni, executive producer. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and engineer Nat Wiener. Good night, and we will see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Good night, Jimmy.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.